Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes. It's so weird to not say SmackDown Somebody anymore. Inside the Ropes, my name's Kenny, joined as always on a Wednesday by Sandra. Hi Sandra, how are you?
Hi Kenny, I'm doing pretty great. A little less of a crazy week for us in wrestling than last week when we were like, hey, we can do an easy 90-minute podcast and then the entire world decided to just blow up or whatever. It was a little bit more calm this week, but there was still a lot of cool stuff that happened. I got to actually go and see a wrestling show last weekend, which was super, super fun for me. Black Label Pro was a blast. If you live anywhere in like the Chicago area, you should come to some of their shows because they're going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to their Mania one. CM Punk was not there, strangely. Aww. I okay. know. Everyone was expecting him to show up.
Was there anything I know on the shows?
On the show, I'm trying to think of who you would know. Rory Gulak was on the show. So I talked to him for a while, which was cool. Drew Gulak's brother, for people who don't know who he is, he's awesome. I don't know if you would know any of the other people, but I mean, there were other people that I know on the show that were really, really good. Sadcom for becoming like my favorite tag team. They're amazing. And they had this like crazy match with so many chops, and like one of them ran into me at one point because they like fell through a stack of chairs into the audience and were like doing cannonballs against the wall and stuff. It was nuts. Yeah, I don't know. It was a really great time, and I'm really glad that we got to go because the weather was kind of looking iffy. So Mr. Sonder was like, maybe we shouldn't go, maybe we shouldn't risk it. And I'm glad we went. So it was a blast.
We both got a chance to check out Halftime Heat, which, you know, 20 years to the day. What did you make of it? What did you make of the Halftime Heat episode?
I thought Halftime Heat was a lot of fun. It was a bonkers match, right? It was basically like everyone did all of the spots and just kind of got all their shit in. And like, I thought it was really, really fun. I think it was really smart of them. Kind of like we talked about on Retro Raw with Halftime Heat. I think it was a good way to introduce NXT to an audience because it was like, it was quick. It was exciting. I think having Shawn Michaels on commentary was actually a very good idea for them because he's a very recognizable name. If people haven't been watching wrestling for a long time, if they're tuning in, you know, having been fans back in the day or something like that, he's a recognizable name that they can be like, oh, we trust him, we like him, you know, because some people are into that sort of thing. And I thought they did well to introduce all of the guys and make them look different and make them look special. I loved Velveteen Dream's Halftime Heat gear where he was dressed like football because he's just the best and he, you know, takes on the, I guess, the aura of whatever he's doing, like when he dressed like a boxer to face Cassius Ohno and, you know, as the Knockout Artist, and he was doing like football poses as though he was Mojo Rawley, but like a lot better than Mojo Rawley. So yeah, I thought it was a really good introduction to NXT, and I thought it was fast-paced and exciting. And I mean, Alan Proven actually said it reminded him of a Chikara Trios match where just like a lot of stuff happens. And it's interesting because Mike Quackenbush, you know, founder of Chikara, was just doing another guest stint at the Performance Center being a guest trainer there. And then this match kind of happened. So it's like, he might have had a hand in that. I have no idea if he did or not, but it would be kind of cool if he did or if that was part of the process. But I don't know. I thought Halftime Heat was a blast. What did you think?
So I'll get the positives out of the way first. So before I get to what I think.
I'm sure I knew you wouldn't like it as much as I did.
I want to say the positives because there are a lot of positives to it. The match was great. It really was. It was a great match. Velveteen Dream's gear was my everything. But it was an entirely missable show. Nothing storyline-wise happened. There was no consequence. There was no reason to watch. And I
Well,
think
it wasn't supposed to be a storyline, though. It was supposed to be like, hey, you're watching the football and don't want to watch Maroon 5? Tune into this.
I think it's more because we just watched one where the WWF Championship just changed hands. You know, and it was like you could not have met, if you missed that episode, you missed one of the most pivotal things that had happened. And I would have just liked something storyline-wise to have happened. I think because there's so much wrestling on right now, you know, you're always trying to, like, catch up on stuff. You're always trying to, like, okay, there's a good match in 205 Live I should watch. I should try and catch more New Japan. There's all these things you're trying to catch. And I think sometimes, for me anyway, I kind of, if I'm going to watch something, I'd quite like there to be. So I was hoping for something significant storyline-wise to happen, even with Gargano and Ciampa, that might lead into something. So I thought it was good. I just thought it was kind of there. And I mean, maybe that's not a bad thing. I just thought with Halftime Heat's got this kind of like, the name makes people think of the one they did 20 years ago. And the performance, I mean, don't get me wrong, if they'd done a forklift, all would have been forgiven in some way.
We are very pro forklift in wrestling.
But yeah, I just wanted a reward of watching rather than just, here's a really good wrestling match. Because there's good wrestling matches all the time. So I just wanted some story of some kind. But if you didn't need that, then I can totally see why people would be thinking it was great. I thought the match was good. I just kind of left going, oh, which I was hoping.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess if you had expectations of anything storyline wise, that wasn't even something that had crossed my mind. I just figured it was going to be a showcase of, you know, people and wrestlers, because they streamed this on YouTube and other places too, right? It wasn't just on the WWE Network, so. Is that right?
I think it was YouTube in the network. Yeah, I mean, I guess it is a good introduction to kind of here's NXT, but I mean, I'm only saying these numbers. I'm not saying they're completely compatible before MD like tweets me anger, but like the one that we watched 20 years ago did like 7 million people, and this one did less than 100,000, and it was available for free on all platforms. So, I guess. My hope was just that something more significant would happen. But the wrestling was really good. I can't fault the wrestling. So, but I did want to ask you about some stuff that maybe will have consequence.
I just want to say one more thing about Halftime Heat. Just 2 seconds. I think it's awesome that Jessica Carr got to be the ref for Halftime Heat. I thought that was amazing because, I don't know, just having a female ref in there, like, it was no big deal. Like, obviously she belonged there. It's still one of those things that I think is really, really cool. And she got to kind of step it up on a really big stage and out there for free for people. So I enjoyed her performance as well.
You did get a chance to watch Worlds Collide, or When Worlds Collide, on the network. And now you've watched the whole thing, right?
I did not watch like all of the qualifying matches that were live streamed. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. So,
I watched the entire thing on the network. That was about like 1 hour 45.
Okay. So.
So it was a smattering of matches, so but it was excellent.
The final was
Velveteen Dream and Tyler Bate, I believe.
And Velveteen Dream won the tournament.
Yes, he did.
Okay. So yeah, talk me through it. What were the memorable parts of it? If people don't have time to check all of it, what parts should they check out?
So I think it's a pretty easy watch. You could probably skip the Battle Royal. I think the Battle Royal is kind of, it wasn't like the best Battle Royal I've ever seen. It was a lot of fun just to see certain people interacting that you don't see a lot. And this is something before I turned on, I didn't even realize that they did this, but it was actually kind of cool. To start out the special, they have a Battle Royal to determine the order of entrance in the tournament. So they didn't announce brackets before the tournament actually started. They had this Battle Royal instead. So it was like, if you got eliminated and then someone else got eliminated right after you, then you were going to face each other, kind of.
Okay.
I just thought it was kind of an interesting concept. Instead of just like creating random brackets, they did it in Battle Royal form, which gave you another match and just kind of another way to get more interactions between people than you would even in tournament form.
Yeah,
so it's kind of, you know, like it's cool to see Dominik Dijakovic in a match with like Humberto Carrillo or whatever, you know, like there are a lot of interactions that you wouldn't necessarily see. And so then when the tournament went on, actually I really enjoyed Humberto Carrillo versus Zach Gibson, which is another thing, like you just don't think of those two performers facing off. Like Humberto Carrillo is very new on 205 Live, Zach Gibson obviously tearing it up in NXT UK. There's no way that their paths would normally cross, and I think that was the coolest thing about the tournament for me, was that you got to see people interact that don't normally. And it like it kind of occurred to me as I was watching the whole thing. I was like, WWE is almost creating their own, like they're creating such their own ecosystem that they can put on almost like indie super shows like this and make it seem like, oh, you've not gotten to see these people face off before, and we can provide you with a really special exhibition match. And they have all of this stuff under their umbrella. It's kind of crazy how the landscape of WWE is changing. But yeah, Drew Gulak versus Jordan Devlin was awesome too. Like, I mean, no surprise because Drew Gulak is awesome and Jordan Devlin is awesome. I really enjoyed their match. Turns out I was super invested in Drew Gulak winning. And then when he did not win, I was very angry. And I was watching this at like 6 a.m. and I realized I was yelling a lot. But I don't know. The whole thing is really easy to watch. I mean, just watch like the last hour of it. If you skip the Battle Royal, the rest of the matches are just awesome. And I mean, Velveteen Dream is just incredible. Like, what is there to say about Velveteen Dream? And Tyler Bate, like, how does he even exist in nature? I have no idea. So it's, I don't, I really enjoyed the tournament and getting to see people face off that we don't normally get to see in a ring together.
So yeah, that's on the network to check
And
out.
it had stakes too, because now Velveteen Dream gets a title opportunity of his choosing,
So now
which is
he
cool.
gets to choose where he goes, what he does. So
And I really like the cross promotional aspect. Like Drew Gulak apparently is going to be on NXT tonight, which I think is super cool. Like I want to see Drew Gulak in NXT. I want to see people from 205 Live be able to show up in NXT UK, or NXT UK guys show up on 205 Live, or that kind of thing. It keeps it more interesting and fresh so that we don't just get like, you know, Lucha House Party versus the same people all the time.
yeah, exactly. So I get there's the WWE news going on this week. Let's talk about Raw and SmackDown. So Raw kicked off with a pretty epic segment, as and this is one that was striking fear into our hearts for the weekend, because they'd announced that Stephanie McMahon was going to be doing a segment with Becky Lynch. So Stephanie is interrupted by Becky. She comes out. Stephanie says, you know, that Becky has to talk to the doctors. If she doesn't, you know, and can't get cleared, then she won't be able to go to WrestleMania. Basically, it all comes to a head where Becky says, "Don't do this, or I'll not be responsible for what I do to you." And Stephanie says, "If you're not prepared to see a doctor, then I'm sorry, you're suspended." So she suspends her, turns around to walk away, and then is attacked by Becky. Becky starts punching her, goes to the disarmer. Referees run in. Stephanie gets away. There's a great piece of subtlety where, as Becky goes for Stephanie again, Stephanie kicks her in the knee. Which they replayed on SmackDown later on. And Becky ends up being told to leave. What did you make of the segment? Because in theory, Stephanie in a segment with Ronda should want you make to self-harm. But what did you think?
With Becky, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was nervous about this segment because obviously we have years of, you know, PTSD when it comes to Stephanie McMahon segments, especially when she's like dressing down performers and that kind of thing. The awesome thing about having a woman in the main event scene is that Stephanie McMahon can actually get her ass kicked every once in a while, right? Which we don't get to see, because if she's just dressing down, you know, the male members of the roster, they're not allowed to hit her. They're not allowed to do anything to her. She just, you know, emasculates them and talks down to them, and then they're like, okay. Well, I'm angry about stuff, and they storm out, right? Becky Lynch can actually hit Stephanie McMahon, and she did, and it was so awesome and so cathartic for me. And even, I mean, we've seen Stephanie interact with other female performers in the past. I mean, I remember when Stephanie had that promo segment with AJ Lee on a Raw that was in Grand Rapids. It was the same one where Mark Henry like fake retired. So that's when I've watched back a bunch. And Stephanie and AJ had, you know, a talking segment where Stephanie just did her, you know, I'm going to talk down to you thing. And she like yelled at Caitlyn for interrupting her. And Stephanie McMahon always has to reign supreme, right? People don't get to touch the McMahons. And we'll talk about it again on SmackDown. But like, it's a very rare time when people actually get to like lay their hands on a McMahon. And the last time I remember a suspension angle like this, wasn't it Roman Reigns when he went after Vince backstage in that Raw that was in Detroit?
Yes, that's right.
So, I mean, if they're treating Becky Lynch like they treated Roman Reigns, that says something about Becky Lynch, right? They obviously have a great deal of confidence in her, a great deal of confidence in her star power, and they're handling her correctly. It's interesting because the segment like Stephanie, even though she's saying things that are genuine, she's like, I'm just concerned about your health and I'm concerned about your well-being and I'm concerned about you as a performer and you should get medically cleared and you should get checked out. Those are actually valid things to say. And Becky Lynch should, like, reasonably, she should go to the doctor and she should get her knee checked out because, I mean, it's still a couple months till WrestleMania. There's every chance she could rehab it and be fine. But in Becky Lynch's mind, in, you know, character-wise, I think the story is really great because she's saying, no, I don't trust you guys because you want to take me out of this main event because I wasn't supposed to be there. The implication that she didn't say was, you know, you wanted Charlotte to be in my main event, but I have, you know, been too big of a star and now I kicked ass and now I'm here and no one's taking that away from me. And nobody wants that taken away from her. We all want Becky versus Ronda, right? So, yeah. I mean, Stephanie trying to say, you know, you should get medically cleared. I think Becky Lynch's worry in the back of her mind as a character is, what if I need surgery? What if that takes me out of it? What if they tell me, you know, for some reason, what if they're conspiring with the doctors? You know, she's getting a little bit of paranoia now that she has finally gotten to where she needs to be. And Becky doesn't want her main event to go away. We don't want her main event to go away. We like seeing Stephanie McMahon get hit because that's awesome. And I think the little storyline detail of Stephanie kicking Becky in the knee, you know, accidentally, not accidentally, question mark, it's an added wrinkle, right? Like, it's actually using an authority figure effectively, in my opinion, which, I mean, you know that I'm very anti using authority figures too much on your show, but this was a case where Becky Lynch actually got one up on Stephanie McMahon and felt like a bigger star for it. So this is actually an effective use of Stephanie McMahon, which we so rarely see that I just wanted to jump up and down and celebrate.
Well, so Dave Meltzer had reported that the idea behind this is eventually there will be a Stephanie Becky feud, which I'm okay with as long as Becky is being portrayed like this.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, because people say, oh, you know, Stephanie had valid concerns. It's like, well, Vince had loads of valid concerns against Steve Austin back in the day.
He did. And we talked about that on Retro Raw too, right? That, you know, it was hard to really go against Vince some of the time, but then he just started being such an arsehole that he was terrible.
So, I mean, I don't think it was topped by this opening segment. I think we just kind of, we got the best thing in the show to start with. But there was a backstage confrontation with Ronda and Becky, where Ronda just kind of screamed at her. And it's funny because I heard, like, a few people saying, like, you know, well, you know, it's cheap of Ronda to be like, you know, why are you attacking Stephanie? Because it jeopardizes our title match when Ronda attacked Stephanie last year. But Ronda attacked Stephanie and was in a match with Stephanie. Whereas this year, what Becky's doing could potentially ruin their main event. So I thought the story there was good enough.
I kind of see the valid point, though. Like, Ronda comes across as a little bit hypocritical, saying, you know, why are you attacking Stephanie when, like, her feud with Stephanie was the thing that got her, you know, in the WWE, right? But, I mean, it was different because she had a match with Stephanie, too.
And then, you know,
which was Ronda's choice. I mean, Ronda chose Stephanie.
Yeah, exactly. So then in the end, Ronda looks at Becky's knee and just says, ice and Advil, bitch, and then walked away. What did you make of the slight confrontation with Becky and Ronda?
I actually quite liked it. I thought it was good. I think Ronda came across as, like, fiery Ronda Rousey, not lost Ronda Rousey, which is good. Because when Ronda Rousey's kind of fired up and looks like she really believes what she's saying and is angry about stuff, I think that's when she's the most effective. And Becky just kind of being kind of quiet, calm. She's not, like, going after Ronda. She's not lashing out or anything. She's just kind of like, all right, I'm not going to let you rattle me. But I think there are cracks that are starting to show with Becky Lynch. I think that, you know, her knee injury that she has in story, like, that really worries her, because what if her main event does get taken away? But she can't let anyone know that she's rattled. She has to be the man. She has to, you know, face Ronda Rousey. And I don't know, the confrontation works for me. I cannot wait for their match.
And then we got Ronda facing off against Liv Morgan. She beats her in about 90 seconds. Then she calls Sarah Logan into the ring, cuts a kind of heel promo in the mic, beats Sarah Logan, and I guess Ruby Riott is the one left, so she's maybe going to face her at Elimination Chamber. I liked Ronda in this show. Again, I've always said I like her kind of stilted delivery because it feels more real to me. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Ronda in this show. I thought she was good. She had fire. She's pissed off, and she can't wait to get her hands on Becky Lynch. So I enjoyed it. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Ronda did a great job on this show. Leaps and bounds above like the first promo she cut last week. It's kind of a bummer to see the Riot Squad just so easily demolished. Like, I mean, I bless them. Sarah Logan and Liv Morgan have to be some of the worst henchmen ever, right? They just kind of get beat. Which is a bummer because I think that, you know, as a faction, I think the Riot Squad had a lot more potential than to just be like fed to everyone. But I do like that they didn't put Ruby in the same position. I like that Ruby versus Rhonda feels like it could be a thing because Ruby Riot's great. Like, obviously, I'm always going to love Ruby Riot. I think she is fantastic. And Ruby versus Rhonda, I think, is a match that could be really, really good, especially if they have time to work on it. And, you know, seeing the two of them face off and having a little bit of a story there, I think is great. I think Ruby's justification after the match of, you know, I'm not afraid. I'm not running away from Ronda Rousey. You know, my girls are hurt. Like Sarah and Liv are hurt and I need to be there for them so I can get to Ronda later. I need to take care of my squad, right? It's brilliant justification because obviously she is a coward and running away from Ronda Rousey, as well she should. I mean, she should be terrified of angry Ronda Rousey, but I like the fact that she can justify it and kind of build a little bit more intrigue to their eventual confrontation, be it on Raw or at Elimination Chamber or whatever. So yeah, I mean, that's something I'm looking forward to, and I appreciate the internal storytelling instead of just like, here's another match.
I think it's good that Ruby's gonna get the match on the pay-per-view. I think that there's nothing you can really do pre-WrestleMania to build up the other members of the Riot Squad because they're not the people that are featured and what's
Right.
gonna be going on. So it's nice, and hopefully Ruby will look good in defeat. I remember she had a match on Raw with Ronda before, didn't she? And it was pretty good.
Yeah.
So just a couple of things from Raw. Kurt Angle came out and basically it was a bit as if he was about to retire. And then Corbin came out and was trying to have a go at him. Drew McIntyre came out. It was about to be 2-on-1, but Braun ended up getting involved. And that led us to a main event of Braun and Kurt Angle against Drew McIntyre and Baron Corbin. In the end, Drew and Corbin get the win by DQ because Braun Strowman punched Corbin and tossed him to ringside and was disqualified because he's not the legal man, which is a new rule in the WWE. How do you feel about this new rule, Sandra?
That has never been a disqualification. It's just like the opposite of 1998. Like,
Apparently,
I don't
this is the new rule going
understand.
forward in all WWE tag team matches that if you're an illegal man and the referee sees you hitting a legal man, it can lead to a DQ.
I, first of all, doubt that that's going to actually be a rule going forward because that's going to upset the delicate balance of tag team wrestling in the WWE. Whatever. Like, it's one of those situations where the refereeing just makes my brain hurt a lot because that's never been a disqualification ever, and I don't understand why it is now. I couldn't be less interested in this main event, if I'm being honest. Like, I really liked Drew as a performer. I really liked Braun as a performer. Kurt Angle should not be wrestling anymore. And I Baron Corbin, just bless him and his vest. But
Bless him and his best.
I can't with this main event scene, Kenny. Like, it's so dull and boring, and I keep forgetting whether Braun is supposed to be a heel or a baby face, and then I realize I don't care enough to think about it. Like, how is it that Braun Strowman, one of my very favorite performers when I used to watch Raw before, you know, I didn't watch it for a long period of time, how is he so incredibly dull now? I don't understand what they're doing. Like, he just, I think turning him heel when they did and trying to, I don't know, reduce his popularity. It seems to have worked. Is it one of those situations now where Braun is the big guy on the roster who's a big monster, so they're just going to turn him heel and face constantly until he doesn't matter at all and is just run into the ground like he is the Big Show? I mean, like, WWE has this problem with booking big men. They don't know how to do it effectively and keep them interesting. And it shouldn't be that difficult. Braun Strowman flips stuff and is angry and is a monster, and we love him. That was easy. Turning him heel and getting him involved with Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler, and then like having a team for some reason, and then I just, it doesn't make sense and it baffles my brain and I just can't with it. I'm a lot more interested in angry Mojo Rawley yelling at himself in a mirror.
Which tells you all you need to. I feel bad because I think Drew and Braun can be pretty interesting, whereas I think the problem is Corbin is just not.
Like, I don't understand why Corbin is still involved in everything. He's not the general manager anymore. So what is he even why even is he?
I mean, I agree with your lack of proper sentence structure.
I can't even form words. I'm so baffled by this.
So I think the initial plan, it seems, was maybe that Braun was going to team with Seth Rollins here instead of Kurt Angle, but Seth Rollins has got an injury. It's not WrestleMania threatening, but he has got an injury that he's kind of taking some time out. So I don't think he's wrestling at the Chamber. But so they put Kurt in here. It was a pretty stale main event. I think the problem was that with this DQ at the end is that they hadn't really explained or talked up these new rules. So, and then, obviously you end up tuning out Michael Cole, Corey Graves, and oh my God, has Renee Young had a personality bypass?
She's
Oh.
terrible. She's very bad on
She's like
commentary now.
almost coach levels.
It's not good.
At least coach would say something mental now and then. Oh
I just I
God.
don't understand. Like it's a very big problem because Renee Young on commentary, like she's never been my favorite commentator, but I think she was decent to good, but now it almost seems like they want her to be a character on commentary, and that's not what she does. Like she's Renee Young and she's lovable and she's great, but I think one of the problems has been that they put her on commentary and then have Dean Ambrose out there, and they're like, okay, well, you're Dean Ambrose's wife, so you have to be in his corner. Or maybe that's her choice, I don't know, but I never want to hear her commentate when Dean Ambrose is involved, ever, because it's terrible. She's just like, well, I think Dean did it. Like, she'll interrupt just to try and defend Dean when no one's even really attacking him. And then, like, she and Corey Graves, I think just, it's probably a case of like they are friends. And so they feel like they can give each other shit, but it just comes across to the detriment of the product, I feel. Like Corey Graves and Byron Saxton, I think, are better together than Corey Graves and Renee Young.
If you had to have sex with Kurt Angle or Baron Corbin, who would you pick and why?
Think it would be Baron Corbin. But
Because you're worried you might break Kurt Angle?
I'm worried I might break Kurt Angle.
If you had sex with Kurt Angle, would you get him to give you a German suplex during?
Obviously.
Okay, good.
I mean, standard protocol here.
Standard protocol. So the only other thing I really had to bring up from Raw, unless there's something else that you really want to talk about, is the. I mean, I can't decide if it was terrible, so terrible that I loved it, or if it was just really fun. The Moment of Bliss talk show,
Okay, I was hoping we were going to talk about this.
where EC3 is her guest. He walks out in his ring gear. Essentially, he is Zoolander. Already, he's more interesting than he ever was in NXT. Already, just because he's this weird, like, pouty man. She's flirting with him. Is she going babyface? Anyway, it's another
I
discussion.
think she is.
I think she
It
should.
feels like
People love
she is
her.
a baby face now.
She's a big star. She's like, you're young, good looking, and you've got a very large bank account. Bet that's what she says to all the boys. She says, he's a hot commodity, he's playing hard and hard to get in terms of Raw or SmackDown. And then Alexa says, what's it going to be, Raw or SmackDown? Before he could respond, Nia Jax comes out with Big Tam. Nia says, nobody cares. They should be talking about the amazing week that she had when she competed in the Men's Royal Rumble match and qualified for the Women's Tag Title Elimination Chamber match. Nia Jax said, everyone was wondering what she'll do next, and she might fill in for Becky at WrestleMania. Then Dean Ambrose comes out. He says he didn't want to be out there anymore than Bliss wanted him to be out there, but he had something to say to Nia Jax. He said it's obvious that she's got a huge crush on him, and she's not the first woman to have a problem dealing with his raw sexual magnetism. I mean, I'm gonna be honest, as a heel and the way he's kind of changed his look, I kind of get it. He's got it going on.
Oh, I mean, he looks great. He absolutely looks great. I mean, there's no denying
He's
that.
that guy that so your friend would have introduced you to him 2 years ago when he had the severe hairline issue and was a bit dorky, and you'd be like, oh, no way, I'm not going with him. And then 2 years later at a party, he turns up looking like this, and you go, who is that? And they go, oh, that's the guy I tried to set you up 2 years ago. And you go, no, it's not. And then you just go, oh, maybe I should have molded him and he would have turned out like this for me.
It's true. It's like the things I could have had. But he's also kind of a prick at this point. So,
That's
you
kind of,
know.
I mean, sometimes you want a bad boy, Sandra.
That's true. That is true. But the whole, I don't know, this Moment of Bliss segment was definitely interesting to me. I
What
kind of
about
like that Nia Jax.
my favorite bit was when Dean Ambrose he said to EC3, "Where's EC1 or 2?" And then he was like, "Are you a Creed fan? You look like a Creed fan." And
Did
then
you see EC3 put on Twitter where EC1 and 2 were?
yeah, exactly. So and
So
then
good.
EC3 goes on to beat Dean Ambrose in a match in a couple of minutes. But yeah, so anyway, sorry. What did you make of the segment? And EC3 gets his debut win on the main roster over Dean Ambrose. What a sentence.
I know. So I actually kind of liked this. It's baffling to me that they've decided that EC3, a guy who's like great at talking, is now a mute person for some reason on Raw. But I think he is managing to show personality, right? Like he has kind of a dorky charm about him, and he looks great. Like the man is in fantastic shape. He's very pretty, and I think it is actually kind of building interest. Like I think people are a little bit more into EC3 because, and they're doing the kind of thing where he hasn't spoken a word on Raw yet, right? And they keep having him almost say something. And Alexa would ask him a question, and then, he'd be interrupted, or, Dean was asking him a question, and then get into, and then he'd either interrupt him again, or EC3 just decided to punch him in the face. And it's kind of like it's almost building anticipation of when we actually hear him speak words, I suppose, on Raw. So that's something to look forward to. It's weird because EC3 is not like the best in ring, but he's always been such a great character. And that's what I, have fallen in love with him for, like character and stories and that kind of thing. But if he can, have a story with Dean Ambrose or have a story with somebody and kind of get him into the consciousness of the main roster, I think it's good that they're kind of starting over because he didn't have much of a character in NXT anyway. It was just like, I'm EC3 and I am 1%, which means I'm rich. And that was essentially it. And it seems like he's actually building more of a character now on Raw, which I really, really like. I also really like Nia Jax as interrupter of dudes she doesn't care about. I think that's great. I think Nia Jax is killing it right now. And I did love when Nia Jax put on Twitter this week too. What was it like, breaking news, Nia Jax has sneezed and injured another member of the roster.
Did you see the one the response to Mustafa Ali?
No, I didn't.
Mustafa Ali put the thing about his eye injury, and Nia was like, "I didn't know I was on SmackDown
So, I
last
mean,
night."
she's very self-aware, and I think she's handling it very well because obviously a lot of people are very critical of Nia Jax, and there were, stories that she hurt R-Truth, and there was heat between them, brother. And she's just like, this is stupid. Like, this is real stupid. So, yeah, I think Nia Jax is handling all that stuff well, and I think she's becoming kind of a great part of Raw too. And I hope that EC3 continues to do good things. The Dean Ambrose thing is very interesting because we were kind of curious if he would show up or if he wouldn't, given the whole contract situation. And he showed up and he put over EC3. So if he is leaving, if that's really the thing, then I think that's an effective use of Dean Ambrose. Help him, build more stars on the way out.
Overall, so what do you think of Raw overall? I thought Raw was a decent episode, but more on the average side. It wasn't as bonkers as last week, and there was some kind of I don't know, guff in the middle. I mean, I guess we should, before we move on, talk about Jeff Jarrett versus Elias, which you would love to talk
Oh,
about, because we
yes.
did. Now, Road Doggy Dog. I mean,
Bless him.
I know he's no longer the Road Dog, right? He is now Brian James.
Yes.
Let's take The Undertaker for an example, right? The Undertaker, who is, what, in his 50s, early 50s? Whenever he comes out, he does what he needs to do to look like The Undertaker, right? He might not be able to move the way he used to, but he looks like The Undertaker, pretty much. The Road Dogg does not look like The Road Dogg in any way.
No.
And I just, whoever's dressing him, I feel like we need to have a conversation. Because
I feel
last
like
week.
we need to have a conversation too, because why are we having the road dog out there with Jeff Jarrett when we could be having Jesse James out there with Jeff Jarrett?
I mean, I feel like that is a very niche thing. That'd be like Barry Windham coming out to accept his Hall of Fame thing as a stalker.
I mean, why not?
I
Why
mean,
didn't that
I can't
happen?
believe that they wouldn't have him come out with a theme song that has the screaming of women.
That he is stalking as a babyface.
You, the beacon of feminism, is just like, why can't he come out to the music when he's abusing women?
My heart wants what it wants, Kenny. But
I
the
did, I
gist
did
of
love Elias's zingers where he said Road Dogg shouldn't you be on SmackDown tanking their ratings,
it was so
and he
good.
told a guy on crutches to stand up for his song.
Elias was great. I don't understand why he had like a phantom heel turn, but I thought this segment was kind of a shambles, right? Like I was
Kind
really looking
of.
forward to it. It was a shambles. It was 100% a shambles.
Jeff Jarrett was dressed like Slapnuts Jeff Jarrett, but he came out to Double J Jeff Jarrett, and he was with Road Dogg, who was singing the With My Baby Tonight song that he didn't sing as Road Dogg, but he sang as Jesse James.
Yes,
The world is broken.
accurate. And I mean, it really just felt like, a time vortex had like taken everyone and just put them in the wrong place doing the wrong thing. Like, I don't know, it felt like some weird and wacky episode of Doctor Who was happening on my television screen, but without a TARDIS or intrigue. It was just an utter shambles. I mean, I will say Jeff Jarrett actually looks pretty good. I was glad that Elias won the match. I really could have done without Jeff Jarrett and Road Dogg beating Elias up after the match to try and like get their heat back or whatever. Like the baby faces 2-on-1 beat up the heel question mark, and the heel is the current star also, and I don't understand why they had to make that decision. Like I would have quite liked it a lot more if Elias had, beaten Jeff Jarrett and stood tall and gotten booed, and everyone hates him because boo Elias, he makes fun of our town, and the Road Dog is wearing our merchandise for that cheap pop, as he told us in his intro. It's also very jarring to hear Road Dog do his like New Age Outlaws entrance, but obviously he can't mention the other half of the New Age Outlaws, because he is with another promotion. So all of it was just kind of a shambles. It was almost like not as bonkers as I wanted it to be, and the time not continuity was kind of a problem, and the match wasn't like great. But Jeff Jarrett's punches are still really good, and Jeff Jarrett looks awesome, even if he wasn't dressed as Double J like he should have been.
I mean, yeah, there's just so much. There's so
But I think
much.
a lot of people are complaining about the segment because they're like, we were promised a fresh start, right? Like the McMahons came out and said, we're going to give you a fresh start in WWE. And like, if you have a brain, you should know that if the McMahons promise you a fresh start, it does not mean that they are going to revamp absolutely everything. But Raw and SmackDown have had a lot of changes. And the reason this segment doesn't bother me, I mean, it bothers me because it was not well executed, and the beatdown of Elias afterwards kind of bothered me. But it doesn't bother me to have Jeff Jarrett versus Elias on an episode of Raw, just the way it probably would have 4 years ago when I was like, why are you giving me nostalgia for things I'm not nostalgic about? Like, it's fine. Because it's not like they're trying to promote Jeff Jarrett versus Elias as the main event of the show, and they're not trying to like push Jeff Jarrett as a big star in the company at the expense of someone who's very important to me. Elias is not someone that I feel is going to, ascend to main event status anytime soon. He's just kind of like, he's a fun character who sings songs, and Jeff Jarrett was a fun character who pretended to sing songs. So having this weird bonkers segment in the middle of a 3-hour Raw, just it doesn't bother me on any sort of level of like, they're just bringing back old stars and pushing everyone down. Like clearly the main event players on this show were Becky Lynch and, Braun Strowman, Drew McIntyre, Baron Corbin for some reason, and Kurt Angle, who just can't quit himself.
I mean, as someone who has, got the moniker of being more optimistic than not, I think they're doing about 50-50. They're doing about 50% good changes, and there's still 50% of kind of just meh. And I guess the hope is that we're gonna get the meh is gonna go down a little bit. I'm gonna stop saying meh. But yeah, so I mean, let's talk about SmackDown. Let's talk about a couple of things from that show. I guess one of the things that is worth bringing up is we didn't see Asuka on the show. We did get a video package for it. Now, I'm going to reserve my thoughts on that because I do have, after this, much to Sandra's utter delight, my WrestleMania card that I've made up.
Yay. I'm actually interested to hear it. I am.
Okay, and I
don't have one.
I'm
I told
being
Kenny he could make a
realistic.
WrestleMania card as long as I did not also have to make a WrestleMania card.
And I'm being realistic, right? I'm not being a. I'm being
This is not your
realistic.
dream card.
No,
This
no, no, no,
is
no.
what you think could happen. Okay.
Exactly. So, but yeah, so I mean, SmackDown, we didn't see Asuka. Any thoughts on that?
I am glad that she was represented by a video package, at least. I would have preferred to see Asuka, but Asuka's in an unfortunate position right now because Becky Lynch is the biggest star on SmackDown. I mean, she's the biggest star in WWE at this point, really. And, Asuka's the champion. So ideally, it would be cool to be like, okay, so Becky's the big star. She's going after the other title. So yeah, let's build up our champion and let's, really promote her. unfortunately, everyone else on SmackDown is tied up with this tag team elimination chamber for the women's tag team titles because the depth of roster on SmackDown is atrocious and there are not other women to face Asuka. There's no other woman to tell another story with Asuka because, I mean, like on the show, you have Naomi and Carmella teaming up because dancing and friendship, and also they're the only two left. So it's problematic because you don't have enough people to tell compelling stories. I mean, where is Nikki Cross? I want to know.
Well, you know,
Because
like, I mean, one of the things here is it's what I kind of, you know, screamed about and tore my hair out for most of 2018. SmackDown does not have high-level female performers for the most part. You've got Sonya and Mandy who are on the way, but they're not where they need to be. You've got the Iconics who, again, are not. The Iconics are going to be great for the tag division.
Yes.
They will work for that. They are not good enough singles competitors. They're just not to be like the high level. And if Asuka's beat them all, Carmella I think has gotten better and is good in like triple threat scenarios and stuff like that. She's good in that, but she's not a one-on-one. So the problem becomes what does Asuka do? Because there's nobody on SmackDown apart from Becky or Charlotte that really would stand a chance against her. And if she was beaten by any of the other people or whatever, it would really just bring her down again. Whereas if you look at Raw, I mean, Asuka could have decent feuds slash matches with Alexa Bliss, Mickie James, Ruby Riott, Nia Jax. That's four just off the bat. So I think it really says something as to how poor the in-ring quality of the female athletes is on SmackDown. So I hope that when we get did you see when the Superstar Shakeups advertised for?
It's like April, mid-April, right?
Yeah, April 15th and 16th, so it's
Okay.
8 days after WrestleMania in Montreal, which should be great. It's a great city for wrestling.
I think it's funny that they're like, it's an international superstar shakeup. Like, ooh, does that mean we're going to get a bunch of international stars and like really shit? No, it's just in Canada. But I mean, I agree with you. The depth of roster on SmackDown is a problem, but
So
it's
let's even it out in the Superstar Shakeup is what I was gonna say.
Let's even it up in the Superstar Shakeup, but it's making me want to pull my hair out right now because you have other stars who are coming to the main roster, right? Like you have Nikki Cross and Lacey Evans who are just kind of floating out there in the ether. Mostly they've been on Raw, but you have them available. And Nikki Cross is a great performer. So I have no idea why in the bloody hell Nikki Cross is not on SmackDown starting something with Asuka because that is a new feud we could see. And that's something that I think if they, you know, gave it time in the next 2 months, you could build that for WrestleMania. And I mean, I know that Nikki Cross might not be like a huge name that everyone knows right now, but I think that if you treat her the way that they've treated, like, say, Andrade or Mustafa Ali on SmackDown lately, then yeah, oh, people could see what she can do. And I think it would be more effective. I mean, like, I loved Nikki Cross and Alicia Fox as a crazy tag team, but I think a more effective use of her would be putting her on SmackDown and putting her in a program with Asuka so that Asuka has something to do. But I think it's just, you know, obviously they have so many stories they need to juggle, and they're really putting a lot of focus on the women's tag team titles right now, which means that their SmackDown Women's Champion is just being forgotten and fading into the background, which I do not want because she looked so awesome at the Royal Rumble. Like I'm with you, Kenny. Like I love the fact that Becky Lynch tapped out clean to Asuka. A lot of people hate that. I love it because I don't think it hurts Becky Lynch in the slightest because she won the Royal Rumble and it made Asuka look like a fucking star.
And you can come
And
back to it.
you can come back to it, right? Because then you can have Becky versus Asuka again and you can tell that story and it could be really great. But it's
Do
just
you think
driving me
that
crazy.
having Asuka on SmackDown kind of just beating people who she can easily defeat, is that worse than having kind of video packages and kind of keeping her like I don't know what the answer is. It's not even like we're sitting here going, here is the answer. I mean, I know that Charlotte is the obvious answer we would like to see,
That is
but
the obvious answer that should be happening, but it does not seem to be happening. I mean, having her, but who else is she going to beat? She's beaten everyone, right? Like she's beaten everyone on SmackDown already. You need new people, and you can do that without a superstar shakeup when you have two new women who could very easily, like, I mean, have Lacey. I guess they don't. Maybe they don't want to beat Lacey Evans right now so definitively or something like that. But I think like you could have Lacey Evans come out, have a very competitive match with Asuka on SmackDown, make Lacey Evans look really good, have her, I mean, she would lose to Asuka, but I don't think it would hurt Lacey Evans. You know, like we've seen people look really great in defeat lately. They know how to do that. So I feel like you need to add more women to the SmackDown roster is the obvious choice. And there are women that are available, so why aren't we doing that?
We will come back.
It'd
to
be a
ask.
lot more interesting than like Daniel Bryan versus Jeff Hardy for why.
Okay, well, let's talk about a couple of things in SmackDown, just kind of top things that were going on. Charlotte Flair comes out to cut a promo. She's so good at being a dick. And she's like, you know, just really rubbing it in about Becky and being like, you know, oh, I feel so bad for Becky. Says that she's healthy and she could face Ronda at WrestleMania. Then Becky ends up in the crowd. Charlotte has a great line about, now you're stealing Roman Reigns' entrance. Becky comes to the crowd, but she's stopped by Triple H, who comes out.
Wasn't it, you stole my dad's catchphrase and now you're stealing Roman Reigns' entrance?
Yes.
Which, by the way, Roman Reigns totally stole from Edge anyway, so whatever.
Right. So Triple H comes out. Triple H initially is trying to be nice to Becky and be like, hey, look, you just need to get cleared. You just need to go and see the doctor. And then as he goes to leave, Becky ends up asking how Stephanie is, trying to rile him up. He comes back in. He basically says that, you know, she's just a fraud. She's being exposed because she actually doesn't want to go to WrestleMania. She went to Raw on a suicide mission in November knowing what would happen, found herself an excuse. She destroys her own opportunities. She's got another excuse now in her knee. She just doesn't want to go to WrestleMania because she knows what Ronda Rousey would do to her, and expose her for the fraud that she is. And Becky just looks at him, slaps him in the face. They have a stare down, and Becky kind of walks away smugly. What did you make of this? This is another... Am I reading into this too much? It felt like what they were doing was kind of trying to show that Becky is kind of even to Ronda and that she can go at it with both McMahons as well as Ronda did. Like, she's getting to slap Triple H, she's beating up Stephanie, stuff that Ronda's already done, but nobody else on the roster's done, so maybe it's a way to try and make Becky feel that she's more on Ronda's level.
No, I don't think you're reading too much into it. I mean, even if they're not doing that with Ronda, like, even if it's not in their minds that, oh, we've done this with Ronda Rousey, let's also do it with Becky Lynch and try to copy that. I mean, like we said before, it's only the big stars that get to do this kind of segment, right? Like Kevin Owens headbutting Vince McMahon was a very big deal because people don't get to put their hands on McMahons very often. And the fact that Becky has gotten to do that with Stephanie and with Triple H now, I think is huge. Because it just shows that they have so much confidence in her as a performer. I think my only criticism of this segment is that Triple H talked for way too long. Like, he just kind of prattled on and on and on and on and on. And I just wanted Becky to punch him in the face so he would stop talking. So I guess that was effective because when she finally slapped him, it was very cathartic. I was like, good, thank you. But I mean, I like the fact that, you know, Triple H also sounds like kind of a disingenuous dick. Like, oh, you don't want to go to WrestleMania. You're just looking for excuses. Well, I mean, Triple H knows a thing or two about friends with fake knee injuries. So, I mean, he's talking from experience here. just saying. But it... You know, it's interesting that Triple H is kind of almost giving a similar speech to Becky Lynch. Is this kind of how he was treating Seth Rollins? Like, I want you to, you know, get a fire lit under you. It almost seems like he's trying to light a fire under Becky Lynch and say, like, you know, I don't know. It was a different type of speech because it wasn't like, show me what you can do. It was almost disparaging her and criticizing her. But again, Becky got the upper hand because she got to slap him and she got to kind of like stand tall afterwards. Becky Lynch is coming across almost a little bit like a dick in this when she's like, you know, how's Steph, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't want her to become as much of a dick as Steve Austin, but she's awesome. Like, she's on top of the world. She's such a freaking star right now. And I think, you know, this is something I think you said to me the other night when we were watching it, that, you know, Ronda Rousey obviously has mainstream name value. She has a lot of publicity and they are getting Becky to that level, and that's kind of what they need to do for mainstream audiences to bring people in and make her like a proper like super mega star. And to me, it seems like they're handling that entirely the right way. They're having her in segments with people that are recognizable names, who are, you know, stars in their own right, who own the company, and they're having her get one up on them and building a lot of sympathy for her with this injury angle. I think it's kind of weird that they're running an injury angle this far out from WrestleMania, but I think if the goal is to build sympathy and put doubt in our minds and add some twists and turns to the story, then they seem to be doing everything right. And it's something I don't want to trust because we've had our hearts broken before so many times.
I mean, this is the first time. And I'm not being hyperbolic when I'm saying this. This is the first time since 2014, so 5 years ago, mm-hmm. where the person that's going to the main event of WrestleMania is the person that's going to WrestleMania is the person that we want to go.
Yeah. And I think, like, they're telling a brilliant story with, like, if they are going to shoehorn Charlotte into the match, I think it's great that they're letting her just be a dick, and they're having her feel like she's entitled, and they're having her feel like she's shoehorned in, because that's the story, right? And so when Becky Lynch beats them, when Becky Lynch beats Ronda Rousey and Charlotte Flair in the main event of WrestleMania, which is what my heart wants so, so badly, it'll be that much more triumphant, because it's like, these are the two big obstacles. These are the two company women, and if Becky Lynch can stand tall over them, it's going to be awesome. You know, like, it's going to feel like Daniel Bryan in 2014 when Daniel Bryan won WrestleMania over Randy Orton and Batista. Like,
and you know, I'm actually kind of 50-50 about the Charlotte thing. I know some people are like, I don't think the Charlotte being in the match, I think it could actually in ways enhance the kind of the odds stacked against Becky. About, you know, I think Becky is going to win. I feel like that's the story. It would be mental she didn't, but it's all going to be how they tell the story. I know some people are just like, because they might want to do Becky and Ronda solo down the line. You never know. I'm kind of open to seeing where it goes first. I know some people are really worried about it, but I don't think whether she's in it or not, it's going to affect Becky being the one standing tall at the end of WrestleMania. I still feel like that's what's going to happen.
I feel like putting Charlotte in the match and having people have that doubt in their minds might make Becky's victory sweeter in a way.
Because... Well, that was like Daniel Bryan, right? You had Batista and Orton to overcome in that match. And I think Charlotte could make the match better. But I guess we'll see.
I mean, like, I guess ideally in my heart, I would prefer the singles match. I would prefer that. But I think that they can tell a compelling story adding Charlotte into it. And, you know, if sometimes when there is that doubt and when there are all of the obstacles stacked against your favorite, all of the backstage obstacles as well as the ones presented to us on TV, then it will make the victory even sweeter.
Here's a question. If you had the choice and it was you have the triple threat with Becky winning, or you get the one-on-one with Becky and Ronda, but Charlotte's going to beat Asuka again. What do you do?
That's really, really tough. I think I'd rather do the triple threat. I don't want Asuka to lose to Charlotte again, because that's just a sad story.
So we also got Mustafa Ali against Randy Orton. They had a 10-minute match. This was my favorite Orton match in a long, long time. I love this. What do you think?
It was the best Orton match in a long, long time. Yeah. No, this was great. Mustafa Ali is incredibly likable and wonderful and the best. He is the heart of SmackDown Live, and I love him forever. And Randy Orton's a dick who burned down Bray Wyatt's house. So my alignments are obviously very...
Not that you're still bitter or hold it against him.
Not that I'm still bitter or hold it against him or anything like that. But no, this was great. And Randy Orton winning was annoying because I do not like him. But I think the finish was actually really cool, where Mustafa Ali went up for his 5-4-0. And, or 054, sorry. And Randy Orton kind of like got him off the top and went into the RKO for the win. It was a very clever, inventive spot. Like, inventive RKOs are, you know, begrudgingly kind of cool every once in a while, I suppose, if we have to have them on the show. But I thought the match was really, really good. And I mean, Mustafa Ali managed to make an Orton match interesting to me. So he's actual magic, I feel.
I love this, the bit where Mustafa Ali was up top and then didn't go when Orton had went for the RKO. Such a clever spot. This is one of those things where I think that you can build Mustafa Ali through being the guy that's trying to get the wins and he's not quite got them yet.
Well, and he's still very new. So, I mean, that story of having to work his way up and scratch and claw for it is more interesting than if he just comes in and wins all the time. Like, I want him to win. I want him to win very badly. But he keeps looking really, really great against people who have been doing this for so, so long and who have been established names on SmackDown itself. So, you know, I don't have a problem with the way they're treating him. I mean, Andrade San Almas did kind of the same thing for a little while, right? And then, you know, finally a switch... you know, clicked or whatever, and then he got into his program with Rey Mysterio and it was awesome. So I think that Mustafa Ali could very well be like a big star on SmackDown, and I think he's on the path to do it.
Can you imagine,
as long as they don't just have him lose like meaningless matches all the time?
Can you imagine if 90 days ago somebody said, by the way, you know Mustafa Ali's in 205 Live? In 3 months he'll be on SmackDown having had main event matches with Bryan and taken Orton to his limit.
Yeah. And Joe too.
Yeah, I will say, just a tiny, tiny niggling thing. When Ali did the promo before the match, I didn't understand him staring at the mask. at the end, and I don't know if that's something that maybe you're aware of that happened in 205 Live, but it didn't click. Like he was talking about how, you know, if he's the underdog at Elimination Chamber and he won't hesitate to take advantage of his opportunities, and then he just stared at his mask, and we got a close up of the mask, and I didn't get the significance of it.
Well, I mean, one of his like catchphrases that's on his shirt and everything is "Be the light." So I
Okay.
think it was probably like, you know, he's going to be the light. He's going to be the goodness. He's going to be the heart of all of us, and that's kind of what the mask symbolizes.
Cool. I think they need to tell us that,
They probably should.
just so people are aware of what that means.
Also, it's shiny and pretty, but yeah, that's
Yeah.
why.
Usos also cut a good promo on Shane and The Miz. I'm actually really looking forward to their match at Elimination Chamber. That should be good.
The Usos bringing up like, you know, daddy issues and, you know, being brothers and that kind of stuff. Like I like the fact that they were hinting at certain things that I wanted them to bring up. And the Usos are great. They're on top of the world, and I think their promos with Shane and The Miz, I want to see them promo at each other, but I thought the Usos did a great job here, and I'm so into the story.
Then we had, I
Way more
guess.
than I'm into the Raw tag team division because, oh boy, what even? Like, I love the Revival. I will love them forever, but like, it's just the Revival getting another title shot again.
I
Are
mean,
they probably just gonna
they better
lose?
fucking win the titles this time.
They better. It's been how many times now?
I think they should unify the tag belts. I really
They
do.
probably should.
And then I guess the other big story of the show was we got a Daniel Bryan promo and also Daniel Bryan facing Jeff Hardy in a match that goes about 12 minutes. And then Rowan ends up pulling Bryan out the ring before he can be pinned. And then afterwards, Bryan ends up putting the LaBelle Lock in, but it's broken up by Samoa Joe. Joe locks in the clutch, but Orton breaks it up. Joe and Orton are brawling before Mustafa Ali comes out. Then Rowan grabs Mustafa Ali and pulls him outside. Then AJ Styles comes out, and AJ Styles ends up standing tall at the end of the show. What did you make of the main event and the outcome? And I've had a brain fart. The aftermath of the main event, Sandra.
I didn't really care. Like it's one of those things where I'm kind of just ready to get to Elimination Chamber when it comes to the actual Elimination Chamber. I think that there are still stories that they're building on the undercard, so we can't just have the pay-per-view right now, but it's one of those things where okay, we have the Elimination Chamber participants because of kind of a lazily set up way of doing things last week. And that's fine. Like, I think they are the right participants for the Elimination Chamber, and that's great. But now it's just like they're just all gonna brawl forever until when is the Elimination Chamber? What's the date of it?
It's next Sunday, the 17th of February.
Okay. So, I mean, it's coming up soon. So I'm glad that we don't have too much more of this. But it's just like they're all just kind of brawling, and it's just kind of there, and I'm
That
ready to
match is
just
going
kind
to
of
be
get to the
great, though.
match. That match is going to be amazing. Like, I'm not complaining about the match at all, but.
We do actually have a listener question about this.
Okay.
Again, I don't know what this person's name is. On Twitter, they're called an active wrestling account, which, you know, okay. Now that all the contenders are determined, who's got the most momentum heading into the chamber? Oh, actually, that's not what I was
Daniel
thinking.
Bryan.
Okay. Who's got the. Now that all the contenders. I misread it. Now that all the contenders have been named for the women's tag elimination chamber, who has the most momentum getting in? What do you want? What would you want to see? So the teams are Bayley and Sasha, Nia and Tamina, the Riot Squad, The Iconics, Mandy and Sonya, who are now called Fire and Desire. I'm guessing that Sonya Deville is the fire and Mandy's supposed to be the desire. And
I assume so.
Naomi and Carmella, who are Team Dance.
Yes, they are Team Dance. Bailey and Sasha, I would say. They are the only ones who seem like credible opponents. I mean, Nia Jax and Tamina, I suppose, because they keep trying to make Big Tam look like a thing, bless them. But I don't really want to see loads of Tamina matches. So, yeah, I mean, I would say Bailey and Sasha. It has to be, right? I mean, the Iconics are just losing to everyone. Mandy and Sonya maybe, I guess, but they seem to want to do more single stuff with Mandy Rose, and Sonya's more of the henchman. Sasha and Bayley seem to be a little bit more on even playing field. And I mean, if Sasha and Bayley don't win the tag titles, then what even were we doing for like a year when they were fighting but not?
And we also have another listener question from Andrew, who says, "Do you think that Asuka might have an open challenge at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view against maybe somebody like Lacey Evans or something?"
That would be great. I would love to see that. I think that would be a great use of Asuka at the Elimination Chamber. Yes, let's do that, please.
There you go, Andrew. They are looking for writers on the websites, WWE, so.
I mean, if it could be Nikki instead of Lacey, that'd be awesome. But you know.
So before we talk, I guess we'll
But I
finish.
do want to talk a little bit about Daniel Bryan.
Okay.
Just on SmackDown, because I didn't really care about Daniel Bryan versus Jeff Hardy. It just kind of felt like a match, and I'm just very uninterested in Jeff Hardy, it turns out. But Daniel Bryan, I think, is still great, and I loved his promo, and I love him, coming out there and cutting promos with Eric Rowan. And I really liked him after the match, after he almost got beat by Jeff Hardy, and Eric Rowan had to pull him out of the ring, and there were all sorts of shenanigans, and people were, brawling, and there was aftermath, and all that kind of stuff. Caleb Braxton tries to interview him backstage, and Daniel Bryan just yells in her face, because this is what happens when Daniel Bryan gets rattled, when Daniel Bryan is like being kind of insincere, insecure. Daniel Bryan is when he is a fascinating character to me, because Kayla asked him something, I can't remember what, but he was just like, "Why are you back here? Why am I coming back after a match? Why are you always here asking me questions? Da 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 da, all this stuff." And I think it was something about Eric Rowan having to save him. He's like, "Eric Rowan is my intellectual peer." And saying like, "Eric Rowan saved me because we believe the same things." And then the other thing I wanted to say about Daniel Bryan was I thought it was super smart when because they're in Seattle, right? They know he's not going to get booed in Seattle. So I like the fact that he was on the crowd side in Seattle. He's like, "You people are smart, but it's all of the rest of society that is terrible." And he's still doing his heel Daniel Bryan thing, but not trying to get booed in Seattle. And I think that was really, really smart. And Eric Rowan got to speak, so I enjoyed that part of the show.
Yeah, it was a good promo. The mystery of Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania continues.
Yes.
Before
I wouldn't be incredibly opposed to it being Bray Wyatt.
you never know. So I guess before we'll finish with my WrestleMania card, but a lot of AEW gossip because we've got Jimmy Havoc signed, Penta and Phoenix have signed. And the report that WrestleVotes, our good friends who always post cryptic stuff, they posted a tweet yesterday that said, "Seems like the first real shot has been fired. Sources say AEW has made an outstanding offer to a current big-time WWE superstar, an offer that is almost too good to turn down. Things are about to get really interesting." And Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful has confirmed it is Randy Orton.
What?
Orton, the Sapp says he doesn't know if Orton has been offered a contract, but does know that Orton has been openly discussing his willingness to speak with AEW. Here's what Sean said: "I'm not saying that Orton was offered an AEW deal, and I'm not saying that happened because I don't know if that happened. In fact, I asked people at AEW about it, and I was told we are not tampering, we are not doing that. Our approach is fresh and independent is the goal for the majority of our recruitment. What you'll likely be seeing is a particular agent trying to leverage more money out of WWE by possibly planting shit like this." And then he goes on to say, "What I was told this afternoon is that Randy Orton has been openly discussing his willingness to speak to AEW, and WrestleVotes followed that up today with a gif of Randy Orton doing his pose."
That is interesting.
You know, that's the kind of thing where Orton's a great guy to go because that would kind of like Orton doesn't have to do anything in WWE. He can just kind of do what he wants. And
Well, because
he
he's done everything in
Yeah.
WWE.
Whereas, maybe he'd like the new challenge.
And
So
honestly, all of my Randy Orton hatred aside, if he gets motivated and wants to do things, there are a lot of really interesting matches that Randy Orton could have in AEW. Like, I don't know, Randy Orton versus Adam Page might be kind of brilliant, Like there are options, it seems. It would feel like a fresh new thing, and he's a big star. I mean, we talked last week, I think, about AEW not just wanting to take a bunch of WWE dudes and try and be like WWE, but I mean, Orton would be an interesting one because he has done everything in WWE, and I don't really want to see him around there anymore.
And also he can take the name.
Yeah,
It is his
because it's
name.
his name.
Yeah.
Like, they can't copyright his actual name.
So I guess, is there anything in terms of AEW, is there anything you would like to see go?
From WWE?
Yes.
I mean, Revival's the obvious choice. Ty Dillinger is still on my list of people that I would like to see in AEW. I think that would be interesting. I'm more interested in like lower level talents that we don't see a whole lot of that could possibly like blossom and bloom and do interesting things. Like Tyler Breeze would be another one that I think would be very interesting because he's never on TV. We don't see him. He doesn't do much of anything right now, which is a shame because he's so supremely talented. And if he went to AEW, I feel like he would get a lot more of a shot to do something. Like they could bring him in with fanfare and he could do other things. I mean, he wouldn't be able to be Tyler Breeze. The name would be a problem, but he could do whatever he wanted. I mean, the guy's awesome. So, but I don't know. It's one of those things where there aren't a bunch of people on my list that I'm like, you should definitely go, or who I want to see in AEW. I'm more having fun just being along for the ride and seeing what happens. Like, I'm really pleased about Jimmy Havoc being there. And I think that's a really interesting signing because if they're looking at a TV deal and whatnot, then, some of Jimmy Havoc's antics might not play so well on television. But Jimmy Havoc's a very talented dude and he is a great wrestler. And like, I'm really pleased for him. And I think that, I mean, his style could bring something completely different to AEW. And like, part of me wonders if, someone like Dean Ambrose, who was known for, death matches and CZW, that kind of stuff, and then came to WWE and wasn't allowed to do any of that stuff, and it didn't play very well because it didn't work on TV. Like, I kind of wonder if someone like Jimmy Havoc is going to be constrained by that in AEW, or if he's just gonna be able to alter his style and adapt to it. I think it'll just be really, really interesting.
My favorite thing from today is the rumor of the Undertaker going to AEW. It is cracking
What?
me up.
My gosh, who's starting this rumor? That's hilarious.
So Dave Meltzer has said this thing about like Undertaker's removed all of his WWE references from his social media. Like, he's never had a reference in his social media.
He's never had social media before, like a month ago,
No,
wasn't it? Like that when he got Twitter?
he's
Or
had
he
an
had
Instagram for
Instagram.
like a year.
Okay.
And the report about
He
the
just got
Saudi,
Twitter then.
he just got Twitter, and they're reporting that well, there's various places reporting that he's not got anything on his on anymore about WWE on there, and then no, I think no, apparently as of right now, Dave Meltzer said he is not scheduled to have a match at WrestleMania, which is a good decision. I think, I mean, I'm trying to be as unbiased as I can. I think he should rest up and get himself to a point where he can come back and just have one last match that he feels he can do it, and it can be a 10-minute thing, it can be bells and whistles, and that can be his out. Because Crown Jewel should not be his out. That should not be the last memory that people who like that character should have. But just and then obviously the Saudi Arabia show is on May 3rd. Please let's not have that conversation again every 6 months. But and people are going, what's his status? And I'm like, well, he's going to be in the UK on April 30th, May 1st, and May 2nd for his Sold Out
Yep.
UK tour with us. So, he is not on the Saudi Arabia show. If that changes, then I guess he's flying from the UK to Saudi Arabia. But
I mean, I guess the last show's on the second, so he'd have to get to Saudi Arabia by the third.
But yeah, so that's kind of it. But you know what? It's going to be. I can't really say a lot because I've heard things, but this is going to be a pretty interesting year in wrestling, and you might get some of the kind of like Raw Nitro jumping ship stuff happening. Not to the level of like Lex Luger turns up on Nitro and you think he's still with the WWF. Like we're it's too much of an internet era where you know everything. But there's definitely going to be some people jumping, which
And
should
that's
be.
exciting. I love the fact that there's an option for people to jump. I like the fact that there's an opportunity for more people to make money in wrestling and people are getting, a bigger stage to work on. I think it's great.
So anything else you want to bring up before we go to the WrestleMania card? Anything else on your mind about wrestling this week? Or even life? Anything you want to talk about, Sandra?
Or even life. Not really, honestly. Like, I mean, it was kind of more of a quiet week, I guess.
Yeah, okay, so should we just get into my WrestleMania card?
I think let's just get into the WrestleMania card. Let's do it.
Okay, so people have been asking me for ages to try and do it. So here's what I've done. I've tried to limit it to something realistic. So last year's WrestleMania 34, had 11 main show matches and 4 pre-show matches. So I'm sticking with that. I'm sticking with that same. So, number one, of the 4 pre-show matches, one of them will be Buddy Murphy against, I'm just saying Akira Tozawa. I have no idea who. I can't really think of anybody who he would face. I was thinking about making it a battle royal, but there's already too many of them. So, yeah, I'd imagine it's going to be Buddy Murphy defending his title against somebody. It's going to be a good match. It's not going to matter. The trend of
It
these
will
matches.
matter to me.
It will matter to you, and that is why it's worth happening, Sandra.
And if it's Akira Tozawa, I would not be upset about that because Akira Tozawa is great. I would prefer if it were Drew Gulak, but I always prefer if it's Drew Gulak. So
You
there
do,
you
because
are.
you're obsessed. Up next is the Men's Battle Royal, hence all the men. You could even have this be Kurt Angle's swan song if you want to. I've not put him in the main card because I just don't think that that's going to happen. So yeah, Men's Battle Royal. Maybe that's where Kurt Angle wins. If not, maybe Angry Mojo wins his second Men's Battle Royal. It's just there. It's part of the pre-show. So the third and fourth ones might be controversial. I don't know if they are, but okay. The third one in the pre-show is the SmackDown Tag Team Titles in a Fatal 4-Way, which I've got as the New Day against the Usos against Rusev and Nakamura against Heavy Machinery. That's the four.
That would be interesting.
I think Sheamus and Cesaro might just go in the Men's Battle Royal. They've kind of been in more matches. I think Rusev and Nakamura will probably be a team, and that could be a fun 4-Way for the pre-show. And this is probably going to be the one that gets people angry, but I think it's realistic. So, I fantasy booked it a little bit just so people aren't as angry about it. I think there will be a Women's Battle Royal, but I think it'll be for the SmackDown Live Women's Championship.
Oh.
I think what could happen is something like Asuka's supposed to face somebody like Mandy Rose or just somebody on the SmackDown roster, and she ends up facing them like 2 weeks before WrestleMania and beats them very easily. So she's like, wants a challenge, and it ends up the challenge she gets is defending her title in the Battle Royal. I'd have Nia Jax jump over and attack her, and have Nia and Asuka be the last two in the Battle Royal, and give them like 5, 6 minutes on their own because they're the only two that really matter. And Asuka retains, wins the Battle Royal, has a fun final section with Nia, a way to keep her strong, and there's nobody on SmackDown she could face, so it's the best I could come up with.
I mean, it would be a big bummer, but I get it, I suppose.
Main show, I think Bayley and Sasha will be the women's tag team champions, and they will defend against the Bella Twins. I think Nikki and Brie will come back. They're big stars. Makes sense for WrestleMania. It'll help do more content for Total Bellas and Total Divas, and they could be good heels to go up against Bayley and Sasha. So that's my women's tag title match.
I wouldn't be mad about it. I bet it'd be pretty good, actually.
I think that we will get the singles match that nobody wants, that they have always wanted to do, and given Randy Orton might not be around for much longer, and given that AJ Styles' contract is up, AJ Styles versus Randy Orton 1-on-1. What do you think, Sandra?
I am fully in support of this match because this would be an excellent opportunity for me to go get some snacks, and I wouldn't feel like I was missing anything about performers that I'm super invested in. So I'm all about like giving me a match where two performers I don't care about necessarily are facing each other because it's a bit of a breather, and I would appreciate that. WrestleMania is a very long show. I'm going to need to go to the toilet at some point.
You will. Up next is a fatal four-way for the United States
And you know, the
champ.
sad thing is that AJ Styles versus Randy Orton could be an excellent match. It really could be. I just don't care about either one of them.
Same. I think the US title could be on the line in a fatal four-way match. I think the new US champion coming out of the Elimination Chamber, like the week after, will be Samoa Joe. When
Oh,
he.
yeah, R-Truth wasn't on SmackDown, was he?
Nope.
Huh.
I think Joe will beat R-Truth pretty steadily, and I think the four-way at WrestleMania will be Samoa Joe, Jeff Hardy, Mustafa Ali, and EC3.
I'm into it.
Then I think there'll
If
be.
EC3 wins the US title, I really want him to do a USA guy homage.
He
Like
could.
just to pop like the four of us that remember those vignettes.
I think you're really aiming with four. I think that the culmination of Andrade and Rey Mysterio will be at WrestleMania, where Andrade beats Rey Mysterio again, and then Rey Mysterio grants his respect. It'll probably turn Andrade babyface, and I think they could have an excellent match at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I mean, more of them, please.
These are two of the people that I find it really hard to place, so I'm placing them together because I think it's probably what's going to happen, is Braun Strowman versus Drew McIntyre. And I think if it just becomes the two of them, they could have a really good 10-minute just beating the shit out of each other kind of match. And people love Braun. Drew's a heel. It could be good. Shane McMahon and The Miz will crumble as the duo with daddy issues, as the best friends. Miz will turn on Shane McMahon. It will have been a ruse all along. And we will get Shane versus The Miz at WrestleMania.
You know what I would prefer?
Shane to turn on The Miz?
Shane to turn on The Miz.
That could
I
happen
would
too.
prefer that. And I think the seeds of the story are there for Shane to turn on the Miz, because I think like the video package being very Shane-centric last week, or you know, Shane McMahon being the one who was kind of courted by the Miz. The Miz has seemed genuine this entire time, and Shane McMahon has been kind of the one's like, all right, yeah, I guess I'll go with it. And Shane McMahon still seems a little bit full of himself. So I think it would be more interesting of a story for Shane McMahon to turn on the Miz, because Shane McMahon, you know, like he's the most likable McMahon, but he's still a McMahon, and McMahons are terrible. So, you know, like it would make a lot of
I
sense.
love that. Like a month ago they were like, "We're not about the authority anymore." That lasted a month. Shane versus The Miz. I think Finn
No, they
Balor.
said we're not about the authority anymore. So instead of having two authority figures on every show, we're going to have four.
I do quite like the kind of potluck. Who are we gonna get?
It's fun. Like they've actually been using the authority figure thing effectively for the first time in a long time. So I'm not really complaining about it, but it's just, you know, I mean, again, anyone with a brain, like if you see all four McMahons out there and they're like, we're all going to be on the show now, that doesn't mean fewer authority figures. That means more authority figures on both shows.
I think that the Intercontinental title will be on the line. I think Finn Balor will be the champion. I think he'll have beaten Bobby Lashley at either the Chamber or Fastlane, one of the two. And I think that Balor will defend against Dean Ambrose. And they can do some sort of storyline where, like, you know, Ambrose either shoots on the way going into it, like, you know, if I don't win the title, I'll leave. And then that can cue people kind of going, has he re-signed? Has he not? Because, you know, why would they put him in that high-profile match on his way out? You know, you could even have Ambrose win the title and then he loses it the next night, and that's his final night. I think there's a fun story there to tell, and I think Balor and Ambrose could have a great match.
They could, if, yeah, that could be fine.
Then I think it's still gonna happen. I think we're gonna get Batista versus Triple H.
Really?
I have a feeling Triple H recovers in a very fast amount of time, and
I wonder how.
hard work in the gym. So I think Batista and Triple H will still happen, and I'm all about it. I watched the SmackDown 1000 segment back last week with Evolution, and give me that match.
I sort of forgot about it.
Go
Like, I,
watch
and
it
now that,
again recently. It is so good.
no, I mean, now that you mention it again, I remember being super into the idea of Batista versus Triple H, but it's something that really hadn't crossed my mind. I guess I'm still not in like all of WrestleMania mood because we still have two pay-per-views, but it's, I'm not mad at it if they tell a good story and it doesn't go for 35 minutes, because that's always my worry because, you know,
10
Triple
minutes,
H at
please.
WrestleMania.
10
Seven.
minutes.
Make it
Seven.
seven.
Seven? You think
Seven.
Triple H's entrance will take 7?
That's fine. The entrance can take seven, and then they can have a 7-minute match, a good 14 minutes total.
Oh, God. You're so
I'm
naive.
not wrong. You know it would
No,
be better.
you're right, but it's like us taking the dog in the car and going, he's going to a better place. Where's that? Oh, it's just a farm where he'll get to run around and not be alive. The final
Well,
team
if I have to watch a 35-minute Triple H versus Batista match, I might not be alive. So I'm
that
really hoping for the best here.
it's like, can you survive the coma of AJ Norton? Okay, the final three matches though are the title matches. Seth Rollins versus Brock Lesnar for the Universal title, as we know. I think Daniel Bryan will defend the WWE title against John Cena.
You know what? That's fine.
I wouldn't be totally mad about it. They've had good matches before. Then you've got the kind of story of Cena wants to win his 17th world title. You could give him it, or you could have Bryan beat him. You could go either way. Maybe this is where, you know, Cena's about to win the title and Bray Wyatt returns and he's part of Bryan's faction or something.
That could be a lot of fun.
There's multiple things they can do, but I think Cena Bryan's a big match, and if Cena cuts his hair, it will make me a lot more tolerable the match. Please cut your hair.
That would make a lot more sense, yeah. I kind of do like the fact that John Cena is aware that his hair is terrible and is kind of just using it to troll people now.
My friend from Vancouver, who was my personal trainer when I was living out there, just sent me a photo the other day of John Cena doing like lifts beside him in a gym,
Oh, really?
because he's in Vancouver. So,
Oh, okay.
said he was a nice guy, but seemed quite odd. I was like, well, you've summed him up there.
That's not shocking.
And then the main event, of course, Becky, Ronda, and Charlotte for the Raw Women's Title. So that is my WrestleMania card. How realistic do you think I am, Sandra? Do you think I'm, are they possible? What do you make?
I think it sounds pretty realistic. I mean, I don't think that all of those matches are necessarily going to happen, but I don't think there are really any out there picks. The Battle Royal thing kind of proves that you are being realistic and not just, going with what your heart wants. Because if it's me, if I'm trying to create a WrestleMania card, which I don't want to do, but I'd be like, Asuka versus Nikki Cross needs to happen, or whatever, But no, I mean, it sounds like a realistic card, and it sounds like a WrestleMania I'd be fine watching for sure.
If
Sounds
Ask
like I really want to be in the building for WrestleMania for the main event. That's like the match that's selling me on WrestleMania, which I think is great because, I mean, like we talked about before, it's very cool that the main event of WrestleMania is being built on current stars and, I mean, also women, which is very cool, and like current people who, we want to see in the main event. Like, we want Becky Lynch in the main event of WrestleMania, and she's going to be in the main event of WrestleMania. It's awesome. Like, we haven't had this in years.
We have not. It's gonna be cool. It's the first ever time women have been in the main event. The first time in years where we've had current people in the main event. So it should be
Yeah.
pretty cool.
Every time Paul Heyman or Seth Rollins or whatever talks about main eventing WrestleMania, I'm like, no. No,
So
no.
apparently the
No, no,
plan right
no.
now is they are saying that those are the two main events because those are the two. It will be one of those two that become the main event. It'll all depend what Vince wants to do that Monday.
And it needs to be Becky.
I think it will be. I mean, I'd be surprised if it wasn't. It doesn't feel like the Seth Brock match is anywhere near as hot to do that. But
I mean, can you imagine? Like, we're sitting there at WrestleMania, right? And partway through the show, Becky Lynch's music starts playing. Can you, like, there's gonna be a riot. Everyone's gonna revolt. Remember, like, I mean, I don't remember. I was very drunk, but like Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar, how angry people were about that match. I feel like that's what would happen. I feel like the rest of the show would just be a shambles. And there's no reason not to put it in the main event.
So let me know what you think of the WrestleMania card, Kenny MC1985. That's about it for us this week. Saunder, what are the plugs?
You can find me on Twitter at SonderRuthRW, like Kenny said, KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Find us on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Tons of bonus content going up there, pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews, bonus content from Finn Martin and Kenny for the Power Slam stuff, all sorts of things on Patreon. Go to youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for interview content. More is going up all the time there. And insidetheropes.co.uk/Goldust for tickets to an evening with Goldust at the beginning of March.
So, yeah, there you go. Thank you for listening to us. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Let us know what you think on social media. Whose plane is out this week, Sandra?
I think we should play. Oh, I'm trying to think. Who was the most interesting this week? Becky Lynch. Why not Becky Lynch? She got to hit McMahon's, and it was great. She was the best part of both shows.
She got to hit the McMahons. She is over like Rover. Here is Becky Lynch, everybody. Bye.
Bye.